This is KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Thank you for joining us. Yesterday on this show, we aired a four-minute conversation with the man who took a bus to downtown Seattle wearing a swastika armband and got punched, knocked out on the sidewalk. Well, the overwhelming majority of you who we heard from agreed with this caller.
Hi, my name is Melissa from Seattle. I just wanted to comment on the fact that you gave a Nazi a platform, a very large one at that, to express their vile hatred, and that should be shameful. What sort of idiot says, yes, let the Nazi speak? And what sort of universe do you live in where listening to a Nazi sounds like a good idea? Nazis are the bad guys, everyone. Why have we forgotten this?
Thank you, Melissa. A lot of you asked that question. Why? Why would you put a neo-Nazi on the air? To answer that, I will start by quoting a listener named Kathy, who writes, "You need to be informed about all aspects of the society, including people you don't agree with. I am curious and need to know how a Nazi thinks. Thanks," says Kathy. But Harvey writes, "If your story is just to inform the public of our growing neo-Nazi groups in the Pacific Northwest, his actual voice is not needed. Call in a scholar. Call in a counselor who works with reformed hate groups. Call in a lawyer. Call in literally anyone else. Voices have power. Y'all gave power to a Nazi." Both Kathy and Harvey have legitimate points. A lot of people have been speculating about this man. Why did he wear a swastika? What did he want? We decided to let you hear from him directly. Now, you may think I let him get away with lies or dodges, and maybe I did. The unedited version was much longer than the one you heard, and I can tell you when I challenged this man's viewpoints, he responded with more of his viewpoints, and we only left in what was most relevant to our questions. Why did you do it? What did you expect? Now, let's get to an objection a lot of you had. As Mitch emailed us, you gave him a platform for his hateful rhetoric, his perceived victimization, and ultimately his agenda of white supremacists. You made a lot of neo-Nazis and white supremacists very happy because this man, although a victim of a crime, is getting people to sympathize with him and join his cause and ultimately spread his message of hate. So, a question for KUOW is, should we keep certain messages off the air? I'm reluctant to do that, but maybe there should be exceptions. One reason we might suppress someone's message in his own words is that it could pose a threat to safety. And what constitutes a threat to safety? On Monday, I interviewed an anti-fascist who explained why the swastika is a kind of assault.
What that symbol means is lampshades made of human skin. It's jewelry made of human teeth. It's the industrial extermination of an entire group of people, of my family, of my friends, of people like me. That symbol, those words, that ideology is violence.
The man who wore the swastika disagreed with that. He said imagery is not violence, and that's a debate a lot of people are having right now. Let's put this to somebody who studies Nazi history, University of Washington history professor Lori Manhofer. Welcome back to KUOW.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Would you call wearing the swastika an act of violence? How do you think about that question?
Well, so in Germany today, that it's a crime to wear the swastika, and that person would have been liable to arrest because symbols that incite violence are illegal under German law, and hate group symbols are as well, and the swastika is recognized as one of those. In this country, it's not illegal to wear a swastika.
Yeah, it's not illegal, and then the question is, should we air somebody who he put on that swastika, and you've heard the interview, right?
Yeah.
So we argued about whether or not, as I was saying to him, to anybody I know, you will be seen as, legitimately seen as espousing the mass murder that you heard described. This man told me, I'm not a Nazi, this is an old symbol, and I should be able to wear whatever I want. You heard the interview. What did you think of that claim that in Germany, maybe it's seen as an incitement of violence? And he said he wasn't inciting violence.
Yeah, I think that guy did exactly what Nazis historically have done, which is to incite anti-fascists to violence. And you know what? I understand that people want to, I absolutely also feel I mean, it's outrageous that somebody was walking around wearing a swastika. I understand why somebody wanted to punch that guy, but that's what they do. They provoke violence, and then they get a media platform. And then once they're put on the air, they don't sound... They're very good at building bridges to moderate conservatives. They don't sound like wackadoodle neo-Nazis. So when you had that guy on, he talked a lot about free speech, and he made some arguments that probably appealed pretty broadly to people who don't agree with Nazism, but who do agree that free speech is an important value. And that's exactly what they try to do. And then the upshot is that the person who punched them and the people who support that person look violent, and they look like extremists, and the left looks violent and crazy, and that's exactly what happened. So yeah, it's hard to watch it go down, and I think you guys are in a really hard position.
Yeah, well, I want to talk more about that. It sounds like you're echoing what a listener said, who said that putting this swastika wearing man on the air, even for 4 minutes, the listener called it shameful collaborationism. I want to get at this, because first you said that in Germany the swastika is seen as an incitement to violence. But then you started talking about inciting anti-fascists to violence, and the idea being that the government doesn't want that incitement and that violence on the street. That's different from seeing the swastika as an assault on groups who could be murdered under that ideology. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people, I think that there is a lot of weight to that argument that the swastika itself is an act of violence and that wearing it is an act of violence. But under American law as it currently stands, and I think this would be a really bad time to try to revise American law on this point, under our legal system, it is not recognized as an act of violence. You absolutely, unfortunately, in my view, you have an absolute constitutional right to walk around downtown Seattle wearing a swastika. So what happens is essentially vigilantism. People feel like they have to take the law into their own hands and they have to punch the person wearing the swastika. And I think that German law, it for all of its problems, I think that it's overall a more helpful situation to let the police step in and say, well, you can't wear a swastika. But that is not the jurisprudence we have in this country. It never has been. It would never fly in the United States if Seattle tried to pass an ordinance. And I think that the anti-fascists should be mindful of that. I think that they should look at the bigger picture, because whoever punched that guy, you know, that is why the guy got on the radio. Journalists are in a bad position. You have to tell both sides of the story. You have to follow your code of ethics.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in a moment. Do we have to tell both sides of the story? What does both sides mean? But you were talking just now about provoking anti-fascists to violence. I want to know, as a historian, what role have media played in contributing to innocent people being hurt and killed?
Well,
that was my that's one of the concerns we have to decide as a radio station. Should we broadcast something that could harm, that could threaten? So what's the media's... What do you know about the media's role?
The major contribution that media made historically that is relevant here is that they gave the fascists a platform. And when the fascists had a broad platform, when they were speaking to a broad audience, they were very good at presenting themselves as respectable, as far more moderate than they really were. And the guy you had yesterday said he was a
libertarian.
Came across as a libertarian,
yeah.
Right? And building bridges to moderate conservatives. And then the way that they come to power historically is they get moderate conservatives on board.
Yeah.
It's not the case that in Germany, if in 1932 everyone who was against fascism had gone out and punched a Nazi in the face, the Nazis would not have taken power. They still would have taken power, because they took power because moderate people on the right got behind them. And that's what they do when they get a platform. They appeal to those people. So that's where the media contributes. And again, I think you guys are in a hard situation, because you're also liable to the claim that you're not telling both sides of the story and that you're not being fair. And that's dangerous, too.
Yeah. Well, how about that? Multiple dangers. As you said, KOW, basically you said, gave... he doesn't call himself a neo-Nazi. Now we're back into but he gave this swastika-wearing man a platform, a moderate-sounding platform. Do you think KOW should have put him on the air?
Oh, my
God. You be the editor.
That's hard.
You be the editor. You be the host. Do you put him on the air? Because we aired that interview on tape and edited it way down.
Yeah.
Do you put that on the air?
It's a hard call. So I think about some of my students who are on the right, and I think that the fact that you put him on the air would gain KUOW some credibility with them, because they would say, look, they are letting this person tell their side of the story. And at the end of the day, that's a good thing, because when my conservative students turn to news outlets that are absolutely based in conspiracy theories and fantasy like Breitbart, I think that that's more dangerous. At the same time, I think as editors and as journalists, there are ways to cover stories. You know, if you think about like the journalistic code of how you cover, if you're going to cover suicide and how you cover suicide and whether it's news and then how you're going to do the story.
That's a good example.
One of the comments that you read about isolating the issues rather than letting the person have a platform. At the same time, I think then people on the right are going to turn around and say, well, no, everyone should be able to tell their story. The fact that this is news, I think, is really interesting. So it was a viral video, right? I
mean, yes. The video of this man getting laid out, knocked out.
KUOW doesn't cover every fist fight that happens in Seattle. Right. So why?
This fist fight seemed topically relevant to us for all the reasons that you know what's going on in this country.
Yeah. And now we're probably going to see more people walking around with the swastika downtown. Yeah.
Maybe.
So it's going to be an ongoing question.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. So now you don't have to look backward and decide. You can help us decide about the ongoing question.
Yeah.
You just gave a lot of very thoughtful pros and cons. What do you want from KUOW as these things happen?
I'm trying to figure this question out. I think that the media in this country is in a really difficult position right now. And one of the dangers is that a lot of people are getting their news from these conspiracy theory places. And looking at that, I think, well, it's really, really important to maintain some kind of objectivity for you guys. But at the same time, giving them a platform is really dangerous. I do not know how to walk that fine line. I'm thinking about it, but
yeah.
It's a hard call.
Okay, this is history professor Lori Marhofer. Finally, anything that I haven't considered, I've been considering a lot, but what do you think we may have missed, or what do you want to add? Or did we cover it for now?
Let me think about. I was shocked by how well he represented himself yesterday. That was really chilling. That even editing down a much longer interview, I think what he said was really effective. And I think white supremacists probably are really excited that that got on KUOW. Yeah. So they're smart. I think that we are wrong to think that if we just give them a chance to say what they believe, they're going to sound like radical fascists and they're going to turn people off. They're not.
Well, sure sounded that way to the vast majority of the commenters that I saw. But you're saying plenty of other people, significant number of other people would have. Or they're being silent?
I think he probably won a lot of people over. And I think that more people in this country agree with far right extremist racist views than we think. Some of the recent polling shows that 1 in 10 Americans think that it's acceptable to hold white supremacist views. Yeah, I think we're underestimating how good they are when they get on the air. Yeah.
Okay. Will you come back and talk again with us?
Of course, anytime.
Thanks for breaking down with this with us. As a historian, as a media consumer, as an American, as a human being, really appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
University of Washington history professor Lori Marhofer on KUOW Seattle.